that gurgling noise is the price of crude oil going sharply lower today. It's now been three straight years of this. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. This morning, crude oil is down, listen to this, 2.8% to below $43 a barrel. Oil production in Libya is ticking along. Shale oil from fracking in the U.S. is up. This month is the third anniversary of oil's great 21st century slide, and this is making the job of policing interest rates in America tougher. David Kelly is chief global strategist at J.P. Morgan Funds. David, good morning.
Good morning.
I mean, looking at this oil price here, it doesn't spell inflation to me.
No, and in fact, a lot of the inflation numbers have looked a lot weaker recently. We had these big cell phone bill cuts, which have pulled out inflation, and the Fed's measure of inflation is actually just running at about 1.5% year over year, as best we can measure it. So there really is very little inflation right now. But funnily enough, after years of the Fed feeling worried about low inflation, they're suddenly getting a little bit of backbone here. The Fed seems to be continuing to raise rates and talking about scaling back their balance sheet, even though there really isn't much inflation.
They're just going to do it. They've decided it's time to do it. And don't trouble them with signs that inflation's not heating up. They feel the timing is right for higher interest rates.
That's right. I mean, if you listen to Janet Yellen last week, or if you listen to New York Fed President Dudley yesterday, they're talking up the economy. They're saying the economy is going to bounce back in the second half. Wages are going to grow more quickly. And that's a reason for them to continue to raise rates. Now, I believe they should continue to raise rates. But if you actually look at the numbers, there really is very little sign that the economy is bouncing higher. If anything, it looks like it's slowing down a bit. So for once, the doves have turned a little bit more hawkish here.
All right. David Kelly at J.P. Morgan Funds. Thank you very much.
Anytime.
The Federal Guardians of Interest Rates next meet on July 25th, the highlight of your summer, I'm sure. The former CEO of Barclays and three other executives at the bank today learned they face criminal fraud charges connected to alleged maneuverings to keep Barclays afloat during the 2008 meltdown. BBC economics correspondent Andrew Walker is following this from London. Hey, Andrew.
Hello, David.
So this takes us back to the 2008 financial crisis. Give me a sense of what these former Barclays executives, including the former CEO, are accused of here.
Well, this was an attempt they made, and a successful attempt in one respect, to avoid having to have a bailout. And what they did was they went to investors in the Middle East, notably including in Qatar, and sought to get them to essentially buy new shares, to give it new capital, to reinforce its financial foundations. And the allegations are about, first of all, some consultancy fees, advisory fees, whether they really were fees for real services or whether they were inducements to invest. And there was also a loan made to one of the investors in Qatar. And the suggestion is that that money may have been used to invest in buying the bank shares.
Now, Barclays didn't need a government bailout. Some would see success in that. What might be illegal? Why might this constitute fraud?
Well, there is that question I mentioned about whether the fees really were fees. There's also issues about the extent to which Barclays informed the financial markets about the full details of the transactions going on. And then there is the fact that in some circumstances, a company providing resources as loan or grants or whatever to somebody else to buy its own shares, that can be illegal. It's called unlawful financial assistance. And I think one of the things that they will be trying to prove in this case is that the loan was indeed intended to enable the Qatari investor to buy Barclays shares.
Have we heard from any of the people named in this?
Barclays itself has said that it's considering its position. As of now, the former chief executive, John Varley, hasn't commented, but two of the other people, individuals who've been charged, have said they will vigorously defend their positions.
The BBC's economics correspondent, Andrew Walker, thank you.
My pleasure, David.
Hi, David Brancaccio, stepping out of my anchorman role for a second. It is the final week of fundraising before our books close for the year. We're asking you to step up and help support us today so that we can continue the in-depth, independent economic coverage and innovation coverage and business coverage that you rely on. Any amount, even a small donation each month, really does count. We appreciate your support. Give today at marketplace.org/donate. We will soon live in a world where brands could have edgier, even offensive names. The Supreme Court has struck down part of a law that bans offensive trademarks. It's about the 71-year-old Lanham Act, which said terms and phrases that disparage are not eligible for federal trademark protection. But the High Court has now ruled that is an infringement on the right to free speech. Case in question, an Asian American rock band called The Slants, which tried to register that name back in 2011. From Washington Marketplace's Adam Allington reports.
It was a unanimous decision, and it basically means that businesses or bands can call themselves whatever they want, even if some people find it offensive.
The risk you run is people may not listen to you.
That's Mark Graber, a professor of law at the University of Maryland. Graber says the ruling is of immediate significance to the Washington Redskins football team, which made similar arguments after the Patent and Trademark Office ruled in 2014 that the name Redskins offends Native Americans and canceled the team's trademark.
The Redskins ownership has to be very happy with this decision.
So is anything fair game? Legally speaking, it appears so. This is free speech, protected by the First Amendment, and Graber says expect to see some people try to take advantage.
When you get a favorable decision, you push it. Particularly in the age of Trump, we're going to see people see how far you can push the offensive line.
The court argued that historically the Lanham Act had been applied inconsistently by the Trademark Office, and what does or does not count as disparagement shouldn't be left to the changing whims of a few patent officers.
Marketplace's Adam Allington from our Washington Bureau. Thank you very much. From our New York studios, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.